Discussing how African people are participating in globalization, ways in which the rest of the world continues to exploit African resources, uncovering labor violations by corrupt politicians and Western government powers, learn what's happening now in interviews with artists, activists, scholars, and a host of other experts each episode. Listen Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Africa Now is also available on iTunes Podcast, Google Play Music, as well as SoundCloud on your station for Jazz and Justice, WPFW, Washington.
United Black Community presents the 20th annual A Love Supreme,
a musical poetic birthday tribute to a narrator,
John Coltrane, featuring the Nassau Holiday Quartet, Cindy Brown, and Nkechi Taiko, Nana Lele, and the Malcolm X Drummers and Dancers. Friday, September 20th, 2024, at E-Life Restaurant, 9033 Central Avenue in Capitol Heights, Maryland. There will also be a special tribute to our esteemed ancestors in Black culture, politics, and music. More information can be found at Blue Nile, Sankofa Books, Sinbeb Cafe, or Everlasting Life, and at 240-832-7203 or ubcindc@yahoo.com. That's ubcindc@yahoo.com. It's the 20th annual A Love Supreme, a musical poetic birthday tribute to Annetta Ruth,
John Coltrane.
This Friday, September 20th at E-Life Restaurant, presented by United Black Community.
WPFW Washington.
Hi, this is Miyuki Williams.
And I'm Robin Holden. This is Reggae Music and the Reggae Experience present a WPFW fundraising concert featuring Image Band, Curlew Reggae All-Stars Band, Lady Flame, and Carl Malcolm.
On Saturday, October 5th, 7 p.m. until midnight at King Solomon Lodge, 2245 Rhode Island Avenue Northeast.
Tickets available at Eventbrite by searching WPFW.
All proceeds to benefit WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Attention jazz and creative music fans. On Friday, September 27th, New York meets DC when pianist Matthew Shipp's trio performs on a double bill with Washington's own pianist and bandleader Janelle Gill and her trio at the NYU campus in downtown DC. Matthew Shipp will also stick around after the concert for a question and answer session with the audience, moderated by Bushmeat Sound System, aka Dr. Thomas Stanley. This concert on Friday, September 27th, is presented by Capital Bop. Tickets and more info can be found at capitalbop.com. That's CAPITALBOP.com.
This is attorney Nkechi Taiko, and I am thrilled to host a new talk show entitled Human Rights and Justice. Join me every Wednesday, 5 to 6 p.m., starting September, as I feature insightful commentary and stimulating guests discussing domestic and global themes encompassing political, economic, and social rights. Get up and stand up with me, Nkechi Taiko, Wednesdays, 5 p.m., for Human Rights and Justice.
We declare our right on this earth to be a man, to be a human being, to be respected as a human being, to be given the rights of a human being in this society, on this earth, in this day, which we intend to bring into existence by any means necessary.
Hi, this is Tom Cole, host of G-Strings, here on WPFW every Sunday morning. I and the rest of the station's volunteers and staff would like to invite you to join the WPFW Legacy Listener Circle by making a contribution to the station's future through your estate plan. There are a lot of ways to do that, through your IRA or retirement plan, by gifting us life insurance, or through your donor-advised fund. We'd be happy to have a confidential discussion with you as you consider a planned gift to the station. Please reach out to us at plannedgiving@wpfw.org or call us at 202-588-0999. Thank you for considering becoming a part of WPFW's future.
School is back.
Do you need an after-school program for your young one? The Words, Beats, and Life Academy is enrolling for students from third grade up to young adults, with programming weekdays, 3:30 to 6 p.m., offering classes in hip-hop performing and visual arts, as well as business and arts leadership, with access to professional teaching artists, equipment, and resources. Located in Columbia Heights, Northwest Washington, D.C. at St. Stephen's Church. Classes are always free. Enrollment at wblinc.org/academy, based on availability. The fall session begins September 9th. We hope to see you or your young one there at the Words, Beats, and Life After School Academy.
All right.
Remember, wblinc.org/academy.
Peace, everyone. I'm Brother Jamil, and in the Yardbird Suites tradition established by our dear brother Askia Muhammad, we continue every Tuesday morning from 5 to 8, playing some things you've never heard before and also playing some old favorites. But we invite you to join us each and every Tuesday as we have an audio family reunion right here on WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington. Peace.
Diverse City Fund is a grassroots grant source for change makers of color in the nation's capital. We fund social justice work by and for DC people of the global majority. The deadline for submissions is Friday, September 20th. Details and application information are available at www.diversecityfund.org. You can send questions to info@diversecityfund.org. Upcoming info session dates and past recordings are accessible online at www.diversecityfund.org. The phone number for further information is 202-743-0130. That's 202-743-0130.
What's at stake will start momentarily.
Code Pink, Women for Peace, is coming to you live from Washington, D.C. and New York City, Thursday at 11 a.m. Code Pink Radio is an energizing new program focused on ending wars and militarism and building a peace economy. Listen weekly to robust conversation and inspiration from grassroots peacemakers from places like Korea, Yemen, Venezuela, Palestine, and Iran, as well as peacemakers in our nation's capital who are confronting war hawks in the White House and in Congress and modeling the actions we want our government to take. Again, that's Code Pink Radio, Thursdays at 11 a.m. on Washington, D.C.'s WPFW and New York City's WBAI, an engaging hour of cutting-edge conversation not to be missed.
We are women of the world. We're from the east, south, north, and west.
Albert Hedab returns to WPFW beginning Monday, July 29th, 2 a.m. till 5 a.m. with music memories, the best of old school from the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Yes, the return of Alvin Nedab on 89.3 WPFW FM, Monday, July 29th, 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Hey, Chris Garlock here.
And I'm Elise Bryant.
Tune in Thursdays at 1 p.m.
for the Labor Heritage Hour.
Every week, we explore labor arts and culture.
As anarchist Emma Goldman said so famously, if I can't dance, I don't want to be part of your revolution.
And that's how we feel about labor music, films,
theater, poetry,
labor history, labor art,
spoken word, basically anything that brings labor and the arts together.
So, join us for the Labor Heritage Power Hour
here on WPFW 89.3 FM.
your station for jazz and justice.
That's the Labor Heritage Power Hour.
Thursdays from 1 to 2 p.m.
The heart and soul
of the American labor movement.
The international unites the whole darn human race.
A formula that progressives can follow that will deliver electoral success. Author Bob Cramer believes there is, and he spells it out in his latest book, Nuts and Bolts, The Formula for Progressive Electoral Success. Stay with us. Good morning, good morning, and welcome to What's at Stake. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Well, last week, Alan Lichtman, the man who successfully predicted 9 of 10 presidential elections, revealed his prediction of who will win the White House in November. He argues that he accurately predicted 10, all 10 of the elections, but says Gore's election was stolen in 2000. He should have won Florida and the presidency, Lichtman says. His system is based on 13 keys that predict based on the strength and performance of the White House party. His prediction for November is that, wait for it, Kamala Harris will be our next president. However, I have to point out that he did not factor in tactics used to steal that election in 2000, and I haven't heard him say whether he has factored in voter suppression to play the part in November, nonetheless. So, but our guest this morning on What's at Stake is Bob Cramer, a preeminent progressive strategist with a command of the fundamentals of political campaigns, sharing decades worth of insight and experience. Bob demonstrates how Democrats can identify, reach, and mobilize the voters they need to win. He's the author of Nuts and Bolts, the formula for progressive electoral success. Good morning, Bob Cramer, and welcome back to What's at Stake.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
Great. Well, tell us what experience you've had with winning and or losing political campaigns that you feel qualify you to develop what you describe as a successful formula for electoral success. That's a pretty bold claim. So you're basically saying if Democrats or progressives do this and this and this, they will win the election. Can you cite examples of when your formula worked?
Well, I've been doing this for about 55 years.
Okay.
Elections of all sorts and issue campaigns of all sorts. I was consultant to both of the Obama campaigns. And there, by the way, they were brilliantly executed by by some of the top progressive political minds in the country. And I also worked on the Hillary campaign, which was a law. I mean, you win and lose. And out of that, I've garnered a number of key principles that I think are fundamental to our success. But fundamentally, it's about execution. The great Green Bay Packers coach, Vince Lombardi, used to start every season to these great football players. He'd start out by picking up a football and say, gentlemen, this is a football. We're going to talk about blocking and tackling. And that's what we have to constantly remind ourselves of. It's not about how many interviews somebody's going to do or, the latest kind of diversity. It's about execution of the fundamental things we know that do, in fact, affect the outcome of elections. Most important of which, frankly, in this election is turnout. We've got to turn our people out to vote because there are more of us. There are more progressives in America than there are of the other side. And we've got to remember that and do everything we can to turn those folks out. That's why it's up to us. It's up to ordinary people to win this election. Get up and sign up and do what they got to do and knock on doors and make phone calls and get their neighbors to vote, not just the people who are the candidates.
But we've always known it's about turnout. feet to the polls, but that doesn't necessarily translate into a win for Democrats or progressives. And you do say in your book, you write that it's about getting sugar honey iced tea done. That's my version of what you said. I like yours much more, but because the FCC may be listening, we'll say you got to get sugar honey iced tea done. So your first chapter is about the voters' self-interest.
Right.
You point out that the voters seem to not always vote in their own self-interest. Case in point, working class whites, you say, who support those candidates like Trump, who come out of the billionaire class and serve the interests of billionaires during their terms in office. You explain why that is. You say there are four possible explanations. Tell us about those, Bob, because clearly I think a lot of people have thought about that. Why would people vote for Trump, a billionaire, when clearly they are not billionaires?
Well, that's right. But people, we have to realize as political people that there are other self-interests than simply economic. Economic self-interests are very important. Security is very important, a sense of security. And they are very important, in particular in this election. But there are other self-interests that matter too. A sense of meaning in life is probably one of the most important ones. Being part of something bigger than yourself and your identity. A lot of the folks who are voting for Trump feel disrespected that their identity has been destroyed by jobs moving out, by the elites on the coast looking down on them and disrespecting them. You recall our Hillary Clinton referred to a lot of people as, what was it? Now I forget the word, but it was a bad word. I mean, And that was remembered. The
basket of deplorables, is that what you...
Deplorables, thank you. I mean, there are six self-interests that really matter to people. Need for freedom is one of them. Control of their lives. A need for structure, which may seem to disagree with the freedom part, but you got to have some sense of order in the world in order to have any sense of control. And as I say, a sense of meaning in life is so important, and a sense of, and status is so important to people, a sense of community and the relationship you have with other people. All of those things factor in, and we have to address them, the ones that are most salient to ordinary folks. Let me just add one other thing, kind of a fun, probably the biggest lesson I would say in this book is really from Maya Angelou, the poet. I've learned that she says that people will forget what you said, people forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel. And when it comes to persuadable voters, there are really only two kinds of people who campaigns are addressed to. Persuadable voters on the one hand, people who always vote and are switch hitters, and mobilizable voters, people who would vote for our folks, but they're not going to vote unless we motivate them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The thing that I think is most important that people realize when it comes to persuadables is we're not trying to convince people. It's like a love affair. You're not trying to convince somebody that you're the greatest. You're trying to make them feel good in your presence. Mm-hmm. They need to feel good about themselves. And Trump actually figured out how to make a lot of these folks who feel disenfranchised to feel good about themselves. And That's why we have to address those folks on their own terms and talking to them about the populist economic positions that they share with us.
Oh, speaking of which, I recall when Obama was running for his first term, I was actually out knocking on doors in a white trailer camp in Virginia. And I went to one door and we were supposed to be telling them, you know, and the lady answered and I said, don't forget to vote on Tuesday, which was basically all I was there to say. And she said, well, wait a minute. And she went back and conferred with, let's call him Bubba, who was laying on the couch. And she came back and said, he said, we're going to vote for the nigger.
She's talking in populist economic terms, and I think needs to do more of this in a number of these factory towns that have been denuded of jobs. about billionaires and, you know, millionaires paying their fair share, big corporations, about price gouging and how to stop that from monopoly grocery store chains and so on. I mean, about the need for tax cuts for ordinary people, child tax credits, and credits for working people. Choice of Tim Walz, I think, was brilliant. He really people identify with him. This is a guy who was a teacher and a coach. I mean, he took his team from zero to state championship, and he talks in terms that ordinary people get, and in terms of values. One of the other key things we always have to remember, if we talk about policies and programs and they talk about right and wrong, we'll lose. People want to talk about values, the things that matter to them. Tim Walz, boy, is he good at that, talking about neighbors and freedom and what does he say about your family? Mind your own damn business.
Stay out of here. Stay out of your business. I'm going to come medically.
So I think that's really been a big help. Now, on the mobilization side,
before you go to mobilization, on the other hand, I've spoken to a few African American voters who say Kamala didn't do anything for us, and while she was vice president, so why should I vote for her for president? When in fact, she and President Biden passed numerous considerable legislation that address issues that primarily affect African Americans, but the messaging is poor. So tell us again, what is your formula about messaging? Is Trump more effective at messaging?
I don't think so. No, not in general. But we can't be talking about abstractions like, oh, the unemployment rate is so good, or the inflation is down to X percent. Now, it's good that those things are in pretty good shape, but we'll have a rate, interest rate reduction today and on. But people's economy is their economy. You can't tell them the economy is good if they don't think their economy is good. So we have to talk in terms of ordinary people, things that affect them.
That's price of eggs at the grocery store.
Right.
And the price of gas when you fill your pump up.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I mean, you know, what you directly, personally experience is your economy. And so the extent to which we can talk about things that directly impact ordinary people's lives, that's how effective we will be. And I do think, you know, do a good deal of that, we could probably do more on the Democratic side.
Okay, so if everyone voted, you assert, the Democrats would win in most of the elections. So what's the disconnect? That's why the Republicans try to dampen our turnout, I would imagine, in every possible way.
Oh, yeah, I think most of these Republicans have decided correctly, and in some ways from their point of view, that the only way they really win a lot of elections is to prevent our people or a lot of people from voting. Because everybody voted. Boy, in a state like Texas, it's a majority minority state. If everybody voted, we'd win. It'd be a blue state. But people don't vote all the time. Now, there are a lot of reasons people don't vote. One of the chief ones is they don't feel that anything they do affects their lives. They feel unempowered. Mm-hmm. And so one of the key messages that we need to communicate to people is inspiration, a feeling that they're part of something bigger than themselves and that they themselves can play a significant role in it. In 2008, a lot of African-American voters, or a number of them, took pictures of their slave ancestors to the polls with them, the first Black president of the United States, because they were inspired by the possibility. And I do think we'll see some of that same thing, with Kamala. But her entry into the race has really inspired a lot of people, particularly young people. Young people need that inspiration, because meaning is really the greatest motivator there.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, I think this the younger generation, they probably wouldn't be taking pictures of their slave ancestors. Some of them tried to signal that they want to kind of move away from that. That's in the past. You know, we want to get beyond that. And they basically want to know, well, what has she done as vice president? What might she do as president? And some of them even harping back to Obama and say, well, you know, he didn't really do anything for Black people. And that becomes their narrative about elections. What do you say about that?
That's a problem. I mean, and I think that has to be answered by people who those folks respect, those young people respect. But you know what? The most effective way to get people to believe in a candidate is not to convince them how good they are, is to put them in motion. You go cheer at a rally or ask to do something for a candidate, you're much more likely to to move to the next phase of being enthusiastic about them because you've made an emotional investment in things. And so we have to do organizing, which gets to the second major message that really impacts get out the vote. Mm-hmm. And then I won't get off your porch until you vote. That's a winner. We know empirically that's a winner. And if we build big organizations of ordinary people, provide them the opportunity to personally invest, then they'll get their neighbors invested. I mean, thousands and thousands of people need to be in armies of ordinary folks to win this election. And that's as much as anything what will win the day next month.
Well, because of the Electoral College, a candidate can win the popular vote and lose a presidency. Recent case in point, Hillary Clinton. In fact, the Electoral College was put in place to give whites living in rural areas equal power to the voters in mostly mostly black areas. It was actually established to maintain slavery, was it not, Buck?
Yeah, we got to get rid of it. I agree totally. It's a totally undemocratic institution. But what we got this time, and so, for instance, I live in Illinois. My wife is Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky, who represents Illinois. And we've organized a thing called Operation Swing State, where hundreds of people are signing up to go canvass in Michigan and Wisconsin every weekend, because that'll have a disproportionate impact on the outcome of the election. You know, you can make phone calls. We can send postcards. All that stuff matters. Mm. And that's why I like to say to people, I mean, you know, this is election is totally in our hands. I mean, if we do our job, we're going to win this election. And if we don't, then we won't. But we can't rely on, how somebody does in a debate, although that was a great last time. And my wife said, you know, it was a great day for badass women after that. She just over that guy. And I can't wait to see the debate between Waltz and J.D. Vance. That ought to be my wife.
I think a lot of people will be sitting by their sets looking for that, I myself included. So any chance the Electoral College will ever actually get abolished?
Well, there are two ways to get rid of it. One is by a constitutional amendment, and it depends on how well we do in this election as to what we can achieve. I'll get back to that in a second. The second way is through a compact of states that all pass laws that they will cast their electoral votes for whomever wins the national electoral vote. And there are quite a number of states that have passed those laws. If we get enough of them to get 270 electoral votes, then it won't much matter. You know, whoever wins the electoral vote, the national vote, will win the Electoral College. And there's been a big movement to do that. Still haven't gotten to 270 yet, but that needs to be a focus. Now, let me just say a word about hope. And one thing that will get people to vote is their fear of what will happen if Trump becomes president, because we're on a knife's edge, right? We could veer toward fascism and authoritarianism. On the other hand, if we have a trifecta, if Kamala wins, if we win the hold on to the Senate and win the House, next year we could have the most progressive period in modern American history. Next year, we could pass the Freedom to Vote Act. We could pass the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. We could have all these voter changes. We could have pass all this legislation about taxing rich people and providing an easier time for ordinary working folks, strengthening unions, all those things we could pass.
You're listening to Bob Kramer, author of Nuts and Bolts, the formula for progressive electoral success. Bob, can you spend a few more minutes with us? We have some more questions for you. All right, so we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to ask Bob about, he says, all voters are not created equal. I'm Verna Avery Brown. This is What's at Stake. We'll be back in a moment.
Attention jazz and creative music fans. On Friday, September 27th, New York meets DC when pianist Matthew Shipp's trio performs on a double bill with Washington's own pianist and bandleader Janelle Gill and her trio at the NYU campus in downtown DC. Matthew Shipp will also stick around after the concert for a question and answer session with the audience, moderated by Bushmeat Sound System, aka Dr. Thomas Stanley. This concert on Friday, September 27th, is presented by Capital Bop. Tickets and more info can be found at capitalbop.com. That's CAPITALBOP.com.
Welcome back to What's at Stake. I'm Verna Avery Brown, and our guest this morning is Bob Kramer, the author of Nuts and Bolts. Now, Bob, you write that all voters are not created equal and that the purpose of the political campaign is actually to change the behavior of the voters. Clearly, you don't want to change the behavior of all voters. You explain that the campaign is basically focusing on a subset, or should focus on a subset of registered voters. And then you describe the voters that the campaign needs to be focused on. Expound on that, please.
Sure. Obviously, when you organize a political campaign, the idea is to change people's behavior. Otherwise, we should all just go to the beach. We want to do the same thing they were doing anyway. We need to, and there are two groups of people in election context that can be changed, whose behavior can be changed to our benefit. One is those persuadables we talked about, people who always vote or are likely to vote and are likely to be undecided and moved. And that's a fairly small segment of the population. Most TV ads are aimed at those people. A lot of the persuasion messaging is aimed at those folks. And it's a very important group. But the second group is equally important, and that is mobilizable voters. Those are people who would vote for our candidates, except they're unlikely to vote unless we motivate them. And it's important to remember that first group of folks, the focus of the persuasion messaging is the candidates that we're asking them to vote for.
Are those the undecidables, undecided voters?
Undecided voters, that's right, mm-hmm. The persuadable voters, the undecideds. The other group of mobilizables, the candidate's not so much the subject, it's the voter. We got to convince the voter that it's worth their time, that it's worth their energy to go vote. And the first way we can do that best is by inspiring them, because inspiration provides a sense of empowerment. And a lot of the people who don't vote are people who don't feel like they have any power in their lives generally. Or that it just doesn't matter to them, you know, about what happens. And a sense of empowerment and meaning and that kind of thing is very important.
So how do you convince someone that says, I don't believe in politics, you know, they're all the same, I don't participate in that stuff, I haven't voted in years. How do you convince them that their one vote is actually needed, and given the fact that the Electoral College is in place, and you know, it's said that vote doesn't really count anyway, but those who understand the true power of the Electoral College know that it does. So what do you say to those people, Bob Cramer?
Well, you've got to get them to believe that by going to the polls or by casting their vote by mail or whatever, that they have, that action will personally address their self, their interest in feeling powerful and feeling, or even it might help them get a better paycheck, whatever. Best way to convince people, though, as I say, is to put them in motion. And on the other hand, ask them questions about what things affect them, what they care about. I mean, great organizers are people who spend a lot of time asking questions and a lot of time listening and not a lot of time talking. And because what we need to do is get them moving, them thinking about what will benefit them. And as I say, the other thing that affects them, affects turnout, is just plain old mechanics. I won't get off your porch till you vote. I won't get off your phone. Just continually, we know empirically that improves voter turnout by 12-15%.
And if you have to organize bus caravans to go and pick some of the people up, that it may not be that they are not wanting to go to the polls, they just have no way of getting there, or it's a challenge if they do. They say over the years, people have said, if it rains, you can count on lower voter turnout if it rains on election day.
No doubt about it. We have to convince them that it's easy and they're not going to screw up. A lot of people don't vote because they think they're going to make a mistake. So they've got to be convinced that they won't make a mistake. In some states, they put in place these voter ID laws. And my good friends at Vote Riders are in business to help people get voter IDs to make sure that people know what they need to go vote and feel confident about going to vote. They're doing that all over the country, particularly in swing states. And it's so making people feel confident about themselves and that it's easy and safe and trying to get them to do it early. We're trying to get them vote by mail, trying to go to early vote. And that's a huge help to banking votes before election day. You know what I mean? Mm.
And I guess in this particular election, it's been said that so many voters have been purged from the rolls that it would be important to, check your registration and whatnot on an early basis if that's what great. You're inclined to do. So you said, Bob, there are five ways to find these motivizable and persuadable voters through geography, demography, voter file, analytics, and polling. Now, let's talk about polling. Yeah. How trustworthy are the polls? I mean, people lie. And we've seen that in these elections. That some people actually lie about who they're going to vote for. Maybe deliberately. Well, it's always deliberate, but for different reasons. Maybe they lie because they don't want you to know who they're really going to vote for. Or maybe they want to skew the polling results in favor of their candidate.
Well, there's also the fact that most pollsters, the dirty secret of polling is that in elections is that pollsters have to make a judgment about who's going to vote. And those judgments are not always right. And that's why it's important to factor in who we think is really going to vote. You know, in that election to replace Tom Santos by Tom Suozzi, not Tom Santos, George Santos with Tom Suozzi. The New York Times Siena poll had it even up in the election, in the poll the weekend before the election. They predicted that half the turnout would be Republicans, half of them would be Democrats, and be really close. In fact, they ignored that there had been 300,000 phone calls and 150,000 door knocks in that district to our voters. We had an 8% advantage in turnout, and we had an 8% advantage at the polls. Simple as that. And why that matters in some ways is because we don't want people thinking that it's impossible. Now, since Kamala has entered the race, generally the polling has been encouraging that we can win.
She's actually 6 points ahead of Trump today.
In the average, in the averages, that's right. And in many of the swing states. But we bandwagon really matters to people. Social proof is one of the main things that convince people to do things, whether it's to vote for a particular candidate or to vote at all. I mean, one of the ways you can help people get people to the polls is to say, everybody's going to vote this year. You got to do to it. Do it too.
Mm.
Oh, okay. I mean, everybody's going. I better go too. That's important to people, to ordinary people. You want to tell people to go to a movie, you say, everybody's going to that movie. Okay, let's all go. And so we have to create a movement between now and Election Day that everybody's got to vote. Everybody is voting. And when we do, we can have the most progressive period in modern American history. My colleague, Reggie Hubbard, likes to say, if you can't get them to hope, you can't get them to vote.
That's a good phrase.
We got to convince people that it is possible through their action to make things better for them and to create this extraordinary opportunity in the United States next year.
And in your book, Bob Cramer, you also say that you have to find the winning number to calculate how many voters you actually need to get to the polls. And you say moving the center of the campaign message, that you lose, don't you worry that you might lose some supporters if you do that? I have a political science friend who always says you can only go so far left before you start going right. So,
well, I guess I'd say most Americans believe in the fundamentals of the progressive agenda. Labor unions, for instance, are more popular than in years. People believe in taxing rich people more than they are being taxed. People believe in Social Security. People believe that everybody deserves health care. Most people believe in reproductive freedom. Most people believe in all these things. There are very few issues about which most people disagree with us. And we need to be talking about those things in very concrete terms to people. But when it comes to the counting the votes, I mean, the winning number, great campaigns have made a calculation of how many votes they need to win, right? And that depends on the kind of situation of the race. And a great campaign is going to go into the election day having the names on a list of the people who, if they just get them to the polls, we know we'll win, because these people we think will break for us based on all of our work, on our canvassing, on our polling, on all the stuff we've done. But not just some generic thing. We need the names of them, because we need to knock on their doors. A great election campaign knocks on the doors of voters who have not voted yet 3 times election day and calls them twice until they vote.
You have a pretty detailed chart in your book that addresses how to find these individuals in your effort to calculate the winning number. Can you talk a little bit about that chart?
Sure. Well, as you said, geography is one way. We have secret ballots in America, but we know how every precinct votes. And if I know that 70% of the people in a particular precinct voted for Democratic last time, I can be pretty sure that any individual in that precinct is 70% likely to vote Democratic. So I can be pretty safe in knocking on a lot of doors there, asking people to vote. Now, people who vote in Democratic primaries, they tend to vote Democratic in general elections. People who vote in Republican primaries, same thing. They vote Republican. If I know based on my polling that 80% of a particular demographic group go with our candidate, I can be pretty sure that those folks at that rate, based on that demographic characteristic, will vote for our candidate. And I can put together a list of all those people and then get enough extra to cover my, the odds. Then I can put together a formula to win an election if I just contact those people and get them out to vote.
Hmm. You mentioned this storytelling is an important part of a candidate's ability to win votes. This is not really a story, but I remember when I was a reporter on Capitol Hill, and I heard one congressman from the South, I think it was Alan Cranston, but I'm not sure, so don't quote me on that. He was saying, where I come from, gun control means how steady you could hold your rifle while riding in the back of a pickup truck. And that one single phrase really encapsulated to me exactly how a lot of the gun owners in the South and across America feel about their guns and what they feel about gun control. So I guess it's...
It does, but I got to say, things have changed. You know, in the last 10 years, I mean, I convened the gun violence table of all the gun violence groups once a week, have for like 10 years. 10 years ago, this gun violence prevention was considered the, a third rail of politics. Today, it is clear that it's the high political ground. Most Americans support common sense gun violence prevention measures, even gun owners, and like Tim Walz. And that's very important for us to know and talk about it proudly and clearly, because that's really, it's very popular. But
Kamala says she owns a gun too.
What's that?
Kamala said she owns a gun as well.
What she said, yeah. But I will point out that people are less safe if they have a gun in their home than if they're not. Mm. Because odds are good that gun may be used in some way that is harmful. Mm. But back to this storytelling. Stories are the best way to communicate a message in so many ways. Political communication is through symbols, not through abstractions, through concrete. And people experience life through stories. And that's why it's so important to tell stories that illustrate a point. And I think it's great. The greatest political communicators talk about stories, about living, breathing people. The story about this poor woman in Georgia who died as a result of the awful state abortion law yesterday.
Yes. I think her name was Amy Nicole Thurman.
Right.
A young woman, mother of one, wanted to be studying nursing, and she was unable to get the medical services she needed for the abortion, and she ended up dying.
Right.
I'm sure we'll hear that story.
She was having a miscarriage, apparently, and a septic pregnancy. They had to wait until she got infected enough to try and do something. Wait, astounding story. Those kind of stories move people more than any kind of people. And because they can picture themselves in the midst of it. And that's exactly what we want to do.
So, how would you counsel the Harris and Waltz campaign going into the fall here?
Well, I'd suggest two things. I have suggested to them two things that I think they're doing largely. One is a heavy, heavy emphasis on turnout. One of the great things about the transition between Biden and Harris was that Biden has spent months shielding a field structure with thousands of organizers and offices around the swing states. That she inherited that and was able then to have that structure there when all of the enthusiasm that was exploded when she entered the race created a flood of volunteers. So build an army. That's number one. Number two, I think they need to be very focused on populist language and framing, particularly in places like Pennsylvania and Michigan and Wisconsin, where they're absolutely clear on things like raising taxes for billionaires and millionaires make pay their fair share, and unions and wages and the importance of providing child tax credits and things for ordinary people, and do it proudly and clearly. And I think that they're doing that, and I think they need to do more of that in order to move some of those folks in, Central Pennsylvania and someone that might otherwise think Trump is their answer.
Bob Kramer, a preeminent progressive strategist with a command of the fundamentals of political campaigns, sharing decades worth of insight and experience. He's the author of Nuts and Bolts, the formula for progressive electoral success. Thank you, Bob, for being our guest this morning on What's at Stake.
Thank you so much for having me and for running this wonderful show. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you all for joining us this morning on What's at Stake. Next week, Dr. Marcia Coleman Adebayo will be the host in the seat. And a heartfelt congratulations to her for the hard-fought victory with the Moses Cemetery case. The Maryland State Supreme Court provided a mixed verdict in the case of the Bethesda African Cemetery. And although the verdict was mixed, it was a major victory for BACC. The National Law Review has now flagged the issue. In addition, the Washington Post editorial board, without exception, went on record supporting the descendant community and calling for Montgomery County officials to place the community at the center of all negotiations. Martha says, the wind is certainly at our backs. Congratulations, Martha and Shigan and your whole entire organization for a battle, a hard-fought battle that was won. And thank you all for listening to What's at Stake. Thanks to our engineer, Michael Nasella. Up next, Wake Up and Stay Woke with Dr. Ife Williams. I'm Verna Avery Brown, and in the words of the late, great Nelson Mandela, it always seems impossible until it's done.
Jazz and creative music fans. On Friday, September 27th, New York meets DC when pianist Matthew Shipp's trio performs on a double bill with Washington's own pianist and bandleader Janelle Gill and her trio at the NYU campus in downtown DC. Matthew Shipp will also stick around after the concert for a question and answer session with the audience, moderated by Bushmeat Sound System, aka Dr. Thomas Stanley. This concert on Friday, September 27th, is presented by Capital Bop. Tickets and more info can be found at capitalbop.com. That's CAPITALBOP.com.
This is Rev Yearwood, and I am so excited to announce our new climate show, Think 100% Climate Friday. This show will keep you up to date on everything climate justice related in a rapidly changing world. We will discuss breaking news and updates on environmental issues, the climate crisis, COVID-19, and politics. This show will make tangible how the climate crisis is already impacting our lives and what you can do about it. So tune in every Friday at 9 o'clock a.m. right here on WPFW 89.3, your jazz and justice station.
Sophie's Parlor is the original women's radio collective. Wednesdays from 3 to 5 p.m., the best music divas on radio at 89.3 FM and sophiesparlor.blogspot.com.
Hi, this is Miyuki Williams.
And I'm Robin Holden. This is Reggae Music and the Reggae Experience present a WPFW fundraising concert featuring Image Band, Curlew Reggae All-Stars Band, Lady Flame, and Carl Malcolm.
On Saturday, October 5th, 7 p.m. until midnight at King Solomon Lodge, 2245 Rhode Island Avenue Northeast.
Tickets available at Eventbrite by searching WPFW.
All proceeds to benefit WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Bethesda Theater presents the SOS Band on Friday and Saturday, September 20th and 21st. Spyro Gyro celebrating their 50th anniversary on Sunday, October 13th, and Norman Brown on Sunday, October 20th. More information at BethesdaTheater.com.
United Black Community presents the 20th annual A Love Supreme,
a musical poetic birthday tribute to the Netherlander, John Coltrane, featuring the Nasser Ali Quartet, Cindy Brown, and Nkechi Taifa, Nana Lele, and the Malcolm X Drummers and Dancers.
Friday, September 20th, 2024, at E-Life Restaurant, 9033 Central Avenue in Capitol Heights, Maryland. There will also be a special tribute to our esteemed ancestors in Black culture, politics, and music. More information can be found at Blue Nile, Sankofa Books, Sinbeb Cafe, or Everlasting Life, and at 240-832-7203 or ubcindc@yahoo.com. That's ubcindc@yahoo.com. It's the 20th annual A Love Supreme, a musical poetic birthday tribute to Annetta Ruth, John Coltrane. This Friday, September 20th at E-Life Restaurant, presented by United Black Community.
Diverse City Fund is a grassroots grant source for change makers of color in the nation's capital. We fund social justice work by and for D.C. people of the global majority. The deadline for submissions is Friday, September 20th. Details and application information are available at www.diversecityfund.org. You can send questions to info@diversecityfund.org. Upcoming info session dates and past recordings are accessible online at www.diversecityfund.org. The phone number for further information is 202-743-0130. That's 202-743-0130.
School is back. Do you need an after-school program for your young one? The Words, Beats, and Life Academy is enrolling for students from third grade up to young adults, with programming weekdays, 3:30 to 6 p.m., offering classes in hip-hop performing and visual arts, as well as business and arts leadership, with access to professional teaching artists, equipment, and resources. Located in Columbia Heights, Northwest Washington, D.C. at St. Stephen's Church. Classes are always free. Enrollment at wblinc.org/academy, based on availability. The fall session begins September 9th. The fall session begins September 9th. We hope to see you or your young one there.